Here on WMUK today, I have a special guest, the new executive director of the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival, Pierre van der Vesthuizen, who is here today to undergo some questions that I'm standing in for listeners in our community, perhaps, to get to know you a little better. You were announced as the new director last fall, Pierre.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you started the job in January.
Yes, January 2nd.
You came from already directing a very important event for pianists, international event. Would you tell us about your former position?
Oh, sure. Yes, prior to coming to the Gilmore, I was running the Cleveland International Piano Competition, which is a very special organization in Cleveland. Has been there for over 40 years and had a wonderful time there developing the programs and the competition itself. And prior to that, I was teaching piano for 6.5 years at Heidelberg College in Tiffin, Ohio. And interestingly enough, I grew up in Heidelberg, South Africa. So when I interviewed for that job, they said, well, we have to give it to you. Anyway, and before that, my wife and I did our doctorates in piano performance in Cincinnati. You're kind of working my way backwards. But my work in Cleveland, you know, while it is a piano competition, I kept wanting to do things at the competition and did them that really focus on celebrating the art of piano. And so in 2012, you know, one of my board members said, well, why don't you check out the Gilmore? You know about the Gilmore because you want to do more festival-like things. And I came to the festival here in 2012 and fell in love, to be honest. I mean, I was just blown away by the hundreds of people walking the streets, coming to films, masterclasses, lectures, concerts, all about the piano. And being a pianist myself, I thought, you've got to be kidding. This is like stepping into like Wonderland, you know. It's it was like Toys R Us for a pianist. So I was just blown away and took a lot of ideas away from it. And when this position opened up, you know, I'd heard that Dan was retiring. And when this position opened up, I thought, you know, everything that I had been doing up until that point, focusing on celebrating the art of piano and just that idea of the many different ways that we can do that, the Gilmore does that. Like it just seemed so perfect. And so I just jumped on the opportunity to be here.
One thing that's been pointed out by pianists about mm-hmm. this festival is how rare it is for pianists themselves to get out and hear other pianists, because in many ways, being a pianist is a solo act. You need to spend so much time in that practice room.
Right. Well, and that's exactly right. And the fun thing about this particular festival is that they're here for at least a couple of days, and some of them do more than one performance. So they get to interact. They get to have lunch, coffee, go for drinks afterwards. It's a special kind of camaraderie, an interaction. And you're right, where most of the time throughout the year, they're on the road 24/7 and they play 100 plus concerts. So it's a very lonely existence. But we're thrilled that they're here.
And of course, for those of us who are not pianists, mm-hmm. learning a lot about the art of piano in a short time can really boost new worlds of understanding and give a person that opportunity in a small town with all the venues close together, a chance to hear so many flavors and approaches
to
Absolutely. This instrument.
And one thing technology is wonderful and CDs and the internet and everything. But one thing that I keep stressing is nothing beats live performance, that live experience. I grew up, like I said, in South Africa, small town, Heidelberg, where we never had, in my 18 years of growing up there, we never had a pianist, anything like this coming to town. And then I went to undergrad about an hour and a half away. And it, same thing. I mean, we had to travel to Johannesburg or Pretoria if we wanted to hear. And it wasn't even a pianist on this level that would come. Apartheid made things hard in South Africa. So, you know, artists rarely traveled to South Africa to perform. So it wasn't until I was in my 20s and I came to the States that I heard one of my heroes, Emmanuel Axe, live. And I will never forget that just tear-inducing, goosebump experience of hearing one of your idols live. And not just the fortes, but those softest sounds that he can bring out, and everybody just holding their breath. And it's addictive in a way, you know, and especially if you have a piano background, but even if you don't, that collective experience that you share, you know, especially nowadays, I think we all can use that shared magical experience, and it's a very healing thing as well. But it's just so much fun to sit in a room with hundreds of other people and you're all experiencing the same kind of magic. That was really quite something.
I'm going to admit that sometimes that magic takes a while to work on me because I have brought, you know, a lot of, say, irritation or something to the concert hall, and other things can be distracting.
All right.
I no longer expect myself to be wowed by genius, even though that's a genius in front of me. I do need to reset myself to some degree. It's not like the performer can do it all. Mm-hmm. You have to do some of it.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there is a certain mindset that you have to approach it with. But bearing in mind that there's still a lot of newcomers out there who haven't experienced this. And that is, I see as my number one job, is to convert as many people as possible to this amazing experience. Because I'm sure if you can recall the first time you went to a concert, and that was pretty magical, and that is what keeps you going, keeps having you go back. You know, it's because every one of them brings a different kind of energy to the room, where you can, you know, listen to a CD, and it's wonderful, it's amazing, and the technology behind it is amazing, but it's going to be the same every time you pop in that CD. Whereas if you can go from one pianist to the next, or even the same pianist twice in a row, will be a completely different experience.
Yeah.
And that is something that's hard to describe to people.
Yeah. I like how probably the role of recorded music was very important as you were growing up when you had no access.
Absolutely. Vital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you got to see Emmanuel Axe and his actual spirit and the way he can project so much more in person.
Right.
To you.
And that's why it was always important for me as a teacher to perform as well, to inspire the students around me, to, you know, because to show that is something very different between just saying it, but then also being up there and doing it and showing what makes the difference.
So the Gilmore Festival will present both solo concerts, concerts of duo musicians, trios, jazz with orchestra. There's a lot to choose from. Details are at thegilmore.org. Now, your wife is also a pianist. Tell us a story about, you know, working professionally with her as another professional musician and creating a duo.
Yes. Well, we met in undergrad. And as the story goes, the practice rooms at the conservatory where we did our undergrad have these little windows but you have to lift them up to see who's practicing inside. It's a little, you know, shutter that you have to lift up. And so I heard somebody practicing Prokofiev's First Piano Concerto, one of my favorites. And I thought, who is that? And so I open up this window and there's this vision inside. And I quickly discovered that we were going to be studying with the same teacher. So I went to our teacher and I said, now, are there any duets that you can assign for us to play.
Well played.
And so we started playing duets together as freshmen. Brahms, I'll never forget. But she must have thought I was an idiot because I was so nervous I kept screwing up. but anyway, no, and we have been playing duets ever since. The first real duet, duo playing experience came in during our master's degree, where our teacher assigned us to play the Bartok Sonata for two pianos and percussion, which is a monster of a piece. And, you know, we thought, well, if our relationship can survive that, we can survive anything.
The Bartok test. It's
the
called.
Bartok test, yes. but we've always been luckily able to separate the professional life from the personal life, because we're both very focused professionals, and we, you know, decided to finish all of the graduate work and start teaching first and everything, and have that. So started a family quite late. But we're partners in everything, partners in life, partners in work. Sophie, we were in Cleveland, very much took part in, you know, planning the festival activities surrounding the competition. She ran our outreach program. And I mean, she has a doctorate in piano performance as well. So she is a very skilled, competent professional and teacher. She always, it's wonderful. We have conversations. She challenges my ideas. I test all my ideas, run them all by her. It's wonderful to have that, to share that passion and that joy. And we always say whatever happens in the practice room stays in the practice room. And we have four kids, so that keeps us busy as well. Jean-Pierre is 8. He'll be 9 in April. Plays violin and piano. And then Emma is 7. She also plays violin and piano and loves ballet. So we really found her a ballet school here. And then we have a 4-year-old, Ian, and a 2-year-old, Philip. So they keep us busy.
Yeah. Are there some musical grandparents to yes. credit as well?
Yes, as particularly on my wife's side, Sophie. Her mother was a piano prodigy. She made her first concert debut when she was 3 years old. Sophie's mom. I know it's sort of hard to imagine. And she did her piano studies and taught at the university where we did our undergrad as well. So. And then her father is a very accomplished violin player, but math professor. And then on my side, it was mostly from my grandparents on my father's side, played both piano and organ. My childhood, I can remember my summers spent just improvising with my grandfather on the organ and me on the piano. That was fun.
Music keeps changing. Mm-hmm. Categories bust up and are no longer the same categories that we started with. Careers have the idea of what a career is has also changed.
Yes.
And yet the musicians today are as well trained and prepared as ever. Mm-hmm. What is your feeling, a glass half empty, glass half full, on how musicians continue to stay relevant and feed themselves mm-hmm. in this world?
I think that's the hard part is, and I've talked about this many times at conservatories around the country, the tricky part is not, yes, you have to practice 6 to 8 hours a day, do your theory, go to all these classes, all of these, you know, have lessons, coachings, workshops, all of these things. But then I tell these young musicians, but that's about 10% of what goes into making a career in music, having a life in music. There's so much more to it. And a lot that is really not, for a long time, has not been taught and conservatory. And now, you know, conservatories are and universities are quickly catching up to that, knowing that they need to prepare students for much more than just what happens in a piano lesson or in a theory lesson, giving them other business kind of skills and entrepreneurial skills. Because, you know, that's what most of them don't realize is you're going to graduate. And yes, you're a musician, but you're an entrepreneur.
You're a small business, right?
You're a small business.
Yeah.
And you have a product that you need to promote. And they're woefully inequipped to do that. And many of them are figuring it out. And I think that's what I always stress is that if you look at, there are so many successful working musicians out there on many levels. Look at how enterprising they are. One of the great stories I like to tell is a good friend of mine, Vera Holscher in Cleveland. She graduated from CIM with a master's, and you go, now what, you know? And she had to put bread on the table, so she started teaching out of her home. Well, she's pretty sharp business and had that business acumen, so she soon grew her piano studio, and now she has a school of nearly 1,000 students of all kind of instruments, just built a concert hall and a school and everything out there in Aurora, Ohio. What an incredible thing. And I think a lot of people can take a lot of lessons from that. But yes, going into music these days and saying I'm going to go study piano or voice or whatever doesn't really mean one thing. It means it is the beginning of so many different kind of things that you can figure out.
What do you think of our new Gilmore artist, Igor Levitt?
Oh, where do I start? I adore his playing. First of all, I think he is somebody that will show the way in terms of what the next generation of musicians are thinking and how they're approaching the piano. And what I love about him is he says for him, he's when he works on something, it's not about the end result. It's about the process. We're so result focused in today's world that we forget about the process and just enjoying the process. And that's you can sense that when you hear him play, is that joy of discovering the music and
it's
just
searching
from him.
Quality.
It's a searching quality,
yeah.
Absolutely. And every time it's a little bit different. So it's not like this. It's very polished playing, but the musical result is different every time, which I find intriguing.
He can also be dead serious. Like, the sense of integrity builds up as he plays.
Yes.
And yet off, you know, when he's talking to Fred Child, for example, he's hilarious.
Yep. he really is.
There's a strong sense of humor there.
Right.
But he can also focus so hard that you believe from microsecond to microsecond what he's doing.
Well, he's a young guy, you know, and he's on social media and Twitter and Facebook. And there's one concert he played in Germany where he picked up his cell phone in the middle of the concerto and started Facebook Live-ing the event. Or if that's the correct verb.
He had enough measures of rest to accomplish that.
Exactly. you know, which was, that blows me away. So he's having the time of his life. He's having a ball, but he has a very healthy outlook on this entire industry, and he will take breaks when needed, and I think he will have a very long, you know, sustaining career, and the way he's been going and pacing himself, he's very smart about it.
Gilmore artists have a way of bringing the name of this festival to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And locally, we like to kind of feel like we're friends with them. Like Kirill Gerstein has been here so many times and has been really open about hanging out. And he and Dan Gustin are close. So that is kind of part of your job description, too, to say, Igor, this is more than just an award in name. This is... You're becoming part of this community that's based here in Kalamazoo.
Absolutely. And this is what's special about this award is, you know, $1,000 of this is a cash award that goes to him. But the rest, $250,000, which is staggering, has to be a specific project or projects that we both agree on. So that is, and he loves that. That's part of the excitement is dreaming up something new and exciting and different with this world-class musician. I have to pinch myself. I'm like, really? I get to do that? That's great. And this can be commissions or, you know, special projects, whatever comes to mind. But that's part and parcel of going to meet him in New York or having him here for dinners and lunches and while he's playing and chatting about that, chatting about the future. And this is what makes the Gilmore also very, you know, like you said, so special is we play a very active role in curating and the next generation of music, of published music and piano music, but making sure that the piano and pianists stay relevant.
I'm speaking with Pierre van der Vesthuizen, who's the new executive director of the Gilmore Keyboard Festival. And we're taking a look at Pierre's life so far and some of the experience he's bringing to our community. Before we get into some new reveals about the festival, I guess I wanted to know how the transition has been going. Dan Gustin has been the executive director for 18 years, and this is, you know, needs to be done kind of carefully.
Yes, and he has been so gracious and generous with his time, and his it really has been a very special experience for me. Do we have this opportunity, you know, to get to know the organization from the ground up with somebody who's been here for 18 years is wild, and it really sets it up so nicely, and it just speaks to the care he has taken overall with this organization and to want to make sure that this continues to thrive and be successful. So we, you know, as I tell people, I am taking a masterclass in the Gilmore from Mr. Dan Gustin because there's a lot to learn just in terms of the tradition of not just the Gilmore, but this town has a lot of tradition to it and is steeped in history and its own particular culture. And then, you know, because I have my own voice and my own mission and vision for where I want to go with this, but you have to start somewhere to go somewhere. And so this is it's such a wonderful thing to have. And he has, you know, this 2018 festival is him. This is his planning. This is all him. And he has done an incredible job. I am so excited about this festival. And I do whatever I can at this point to, there's a million things to be done. So to get everything up and going. But a lot of the planning has been done.
At this point, I'd like to bring Curtis Cunningham, Director of Publicity, into the conversation. And Curtis, Dan Gustin, of course, was the person who brought you into the organization and has prepped you as well on what this season is going to be like.
And it's an amazing season, that's for sure. It's 18 days. We have over 100 different events. In a nutshell, we're bringing in legends. We're bringing in young artists. We have family concerts. It's available. We have things for babies as well. But we do have things for the aficionados as well. And everything's available at thegilmore.org. And tickets are on sale.
Is there any new news that you might be able to share with me today as a WMUK, something of a exclusive?
Oh, yes.
Do you want to take this one?
Yes, sure. Well, one of the things that have been not announced yet is our May 5th event. And I am just thrilled that we are able to bring for the first time to Kalamazoo the Spanish Harlem Orchestra. They are a 2-time Grammy winning, 4-time nominated group based in Harlem, of course. And they are known all over the world for their particular brand of salsa music. And it's jazz, you know. But it's a 13-piece orchestra led by a pianist, Oscar Hernandez, who's worked with some legends like Paul Simon. And he's just a wonderful guy. And it is rip-roaringly great music. It'll probably get everybody up and dancing. And we'll have it in Chennery on Saturday, May 5th. I'm excited beyond belief. It's going to be very, very fun. To have them here. A
13-member band of salsa players.
Isn't that great?
It's a lot of noise.
You know, that is just the kind of boost that the Midwest can use. Yeah.
It's a great way to celebrate spring, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So yes.
Get off your feet and
Saturday,
move around.
May 5th. Mm-hmm. There are so many undercover dancers in this area as well.
That's what I've been hearing.
Yeah. This will be irresistible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other highlights, what are you looking forward to for solo musicians? Let me hear some recitals that appeal.
For me, you know, we were talking about some idols. And one of my idols that I've never heard live is Mari Pariah. And so I am, I can't tell you how excited I am. So he will be coming. I look forward to that. And then, you know, there's some Gilmore artists that I haven't heard live. Ingrid Fleeter, she will be playing, she's already won sold-out show, Messiaen Quartet for the End of Time, but she's playing a duo with Catherine Chi, wonderful music. Leif Ove Andsnes, I've never heard him live, you know, it's sort of crazy to think about that, but, and then a person who I have heard many times and who I adore is Kirill Gerstein, and I know he's a big favorite here as well. And then there's some jazz legends like Dr. Lonnie Smith, or just I can't believe that's he's coming here. That's really wonderful. No, I can, because it's, you know, Dan made it happen. So and Christian Sands, and but one concert that I'm also very excited about is, I should have mentioned, when my wife and I first came to the States, we were recruited by a piano professor out of Youngstown State in Ohio. So we spent 3 semesters there before going to Cincinnati for our doctorates, because she had a South African connection and so on. So it goes. But anyway, a young tenor superstar by the name of Lawrence Brownlee is from Youngstown, Ohio. And so I've always heard about him. And we have a Youngstown constituency coming, but he's just wrapping up at the Chicago Lyric, and he sang at the Met, has an incredible voice. So I'm really excited about him.
There's always one song recital, and
yes,
it's always packed to the gills, and it's always a great, great star.
Yeah.
So good luck, folks. The number.
It's Stetson Chapel. It's going to be a gorgeous setting as well. Yeah. And he'll be accompanied by a pianist, of course.
Yep.
But he's also the 2017 Opera Star of the Year. Mm-hmm. So he's got a great reputation. He's doing a new commission piece that just debuted last week. So it's called Cycles for the End of Time. And it's a strong piece. It's important for what's happening today. So it's poignant in regards to being timely as well.
And it ties in nicely with what Ingrid is doing with the Messiaen Quartet for the End of Time.
You might have to add extra shows. You might, Ingrid, right. Sorry, you're just going to have to stay.
I know.
Keep playing.
She's amazing.
All right. Any other things you're looking forward to, Curtis?
Well, we are celebrating some birthdays, and mm-hmm. there's actually 3 birthdays that we're hitting on. One is Leonard Bernstein. If he were alive, would be 100 years old this year. And we've got a couple different celebrations with him. One is we're bringing in his daughter, who's got a show called Late Night with Bernstein. And it's a great multimedia show with pianist and a singer as well, that will be at Dalton. We're also celebrating William Bolcom's 80th birthday. He's got a couple of pieces that will be performed by several artists. And also Leon Flesher is going to be here himself for his 90th birthday. And he will be playing with some of his students, but also with the Gilmore Chamber Orchestra, which is a combination of Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo as well. So a great birthday celebration for everybody.
Mm-hmm. There are numerous ways to explore the offerings. There are pamphlets that should have reached many people at this point, but you can pick them up at the office downtown. Mm-hmm. You can even get someone on the phone and talk to them for a half an hour if you want.
That's true. We pride ourselves on that.
And what's that number again?
The box office number itself would be 269-359-7311. We do have box office hours Monday through Friday and on Saturday as well. But thegilmore.org is available to buy tickets and information 24 hours a day.
Okay. Well, I can't keep you here forever, but it's been very fun getting to know you, Pierre. And enjoy this first festival. I cannot wait to see what your mind, your brain trust is going to come up with. Please come back and chat with us anytime you like.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.